The chairman welcomes Chef Chris Cosentino.
Chef Cosentino, welcome back.
Thank you for inviting me.
You are a highly skilled butcher. Tell me, which Iron Chef will gasp at the sight of your mighty meat?
Because you put us both through the ringer last summer, I choose my friend, Iron Chef Michael Simon.
I really like you.
Daring choice. And now, let the battle begin!
Yeah!
Happy New Year, everybody. 2009, finally here. I hope you're all doing well. My name is Phil. This is My Life as a Foodie. This show is going to be all over the place today. We're going to discuss what we got for Christmas, some exciting new toys to play with, a beer from Wisconsin that I'm sure more than half of you probably haven't even heard of, and even fewer have even tasted. So we've got that to look forward to. Going to make some cassoulet, which is a French bean dish, and some other stuff. Bam! Oh man, what a year. Oof. 2008. Sucked a big set of monkey balls. I'm glad it's behind us. Then we can look forward to some new beginnings, some fresh new things, a clean slate. We got a new president in a few weeks, a new NFL champion a couple weeks after that, and then spring training starts. Manny Ramirez, still a free agent too, in case if any of you guys are looking for an outfielder who can hit dingers. And you got about $25 million a year to throw around. Be great if the Dodgers got him back, man. Oof. That was one of the greatest years of baseball I can remember here in Los Angeles. Fantastic. Not sure about any of you guys, but Christmas was just an absolute blast here for me. The wife laid some serious goods on me. Lots of food stuff, of course. It was a complete foodie Christmas. I got some great books, some goodies for the kitchen. Bouquet Garni bags. Little bags to actually put your Bouquet Garni stuff in. Throw it in and you can take it out. Soup socks. These are great. Stock sock is what it was called. You know what that is? It's a big cheesecloth net. You put your bones and your vegetables and your aromats in this sock. And then you drop it into water and you simmer it. So when you're ready to strain your stock, you just pull this bag out and all your stuff comes out with it. And all you're left with is the stock. Now, you can strain it after that if you want to clarify your stock. But for the most part, you know, you don't have to go fishing crap out of your stock. You know, you've got vegetables and bones and all sorts of other stuff, meat matter. It takes it all out. And they were cheap, $3.99 for like three bags. I love making stock, too. So these are awesome stocking stuffers. Sur La Table is such a great store for cooks, home chefs. Man, it's like Disneyland for cooks. And she got me an ice cream maker for my KitchenAid blender. That was cool. I made vanilla ice cream with it. It was freaking awesome. I made my own ice cream. I never made ice cream before. Never had an ice cream maker. And it was easy as sin. When we were kids, used to make it. And it was in like a little big wooden barrel. We had dry ice. And it was a whole thing. Of course, you try to make it in the summer too. Because when you eat ice cream, it's summertime. So it's hot. And it's hard to keep that stuff cold. So here I am. It's in December. I put on Facebook, I said, hey, I'm making ice cream in December, comfort food, you know? And the next thing I know, everyone's commenting, oh man, we love to make ice cream. I had no idea how many people made ice cream and that making ice cream was that popular. I mean, everyone's doing it. Gambler and his wife start sending me these recipes for ice cream, 4 or 5 different recipes, and they all look spectacular. I mean, it's tricky making custard, too. For vanilla ice cream, you make custard. You mix milk and cream, and you get it warm, and then you whip in egg yolks into this hot milk, and you got to keep that whisk rocking, you know, or you're going to end up with scrambled eggs. I mean, I was a whipping fool. Arm hurt like crazy. But it came out perfect. And so now I can't wait for summer. It's so cool to do this stuff. I mean, I just keep experimenting with new things, and I'm just growing in the kitchen. I love it. It's part of what the hobby that I just dig, you know? I just like making new things. Oh, we're going to make mozzarella cheese on the show very soon, maybe February or March. So look for that. I've been waiting to do this for a long time, but I want to do it with Katrina. I want her to be on the show with me. I want to get her involved, and we'll have her on the show, and we'll make mozzarella, and maybe we'll make pizza. All right, so we'll make the fresh mozzarella, and then we'll do the pizza dough, and we'll have a mozzarella pizza show. All right, that talk of a completely homemade. It'll be great. Also, fans of Dude Night are going to be happy to know that I recently talked with Hog Dog, and he's been doing a lot of business in Brazil, traveling back and forth, and he wants to come on the show, discuss food in Brazil. So I'm really looking forward to that. And I want to line it up as quickly as I can before he changes his mind. So maybe as soon as next show, not sure, when I can get him down here, we'll crack out a special brew, we'll have him here for the whole show, and we'll make it an all-Brazil show. It'll be like Dude Night meets My Life as a Foodie. All right, so stay tuned for that. Oh, and one other fun gift I got the shirt. Katrina got me this shirt. Chris Constantino's Awful Good website has this shirt. It's a drawing of a hot dog with a big happy face. He's like, woo, I'm a hot dog. And then across the top, it says lips and assholes. And underneath that, it says the other white meat. Funny as hell. And I'm not going to be afraid to wear it everywhere. I'll even wear it to church, like I go to church.
And the pate is, like I said earlier, a mix of belly, shoulder. Then you have liver, kidney, spleen, heart, tongue.
Chris Constantino is executive chef of San Francisco's Encanto restaurant. And he's serving up all kinds of delicacies using every part of the pig.
Not only is it the right way to do things, it's also the ethical way to do things. Like, if you're willing to kill it, you should be willing to use all of it and eat all of it.
Constantino uses old world tradition to create his menu, and he makes no apologies.
So people are just now picky. Oh, I can't eat that. That's gross. That's disgusting. We never had those problems in the past because it was upon necessity.
Chef Constantino knows exactly what goes into his salumi, the fancy word for artisanal salami, because he owns the company that makes the meat.
We use a lot less salt. Like this one, we actually use brown sugar in it.
And when available, he buys pigs from farms that are certified humane raised and handled.
They don't get hormones. They don't get antibiotics. They're all clean.
Constantino is just one of many Bay Area chefs to do this, giving diners and shoppers more reason than ever to pig out.
I mean, there's that old saying, if you catch the oink, you'd eat that too.
Sloan Barnett, NBC Bay Area News.
Okay, so I'm going to make y'all jealous right now. I'm drinking a beer that was sent to me from Gambler in Wisconsin. And it's from a brewery that I honestly can say this. They're too good for California. They won't ship their beer out here. And I'm not saying that to be like a dick, but they seriously are too good for California. I mean, everything I've had from New Glarus Brewing, it's just been awesome. I mean, they make really excellent beer. They make beer the way, you know, artisanal brewers make beer, because that's what they are. They're in New Glarus, Wisconsin. And what Gambler sent me was a special release from this series. They call it Unplugged. So they'll do 4 or 5 of these a year and different beers. And this one happens to be a Berliner Weiss. And Berliner Weiss is Hefeweizen. And it's like champagne. And it really is. It's like champagne. I haven't opened it yet. I've been staring at it. He sent this to me last year. It's been sitting in the fridge ever since it came here, and I'm going to open it, and I'm probably going to have a beergasm right in front of you. it comes with this little foil top. Open it. My God, it's like opening a Christmas gift. It just keeps on giving. All right. I even cracked out a special Pilsner glass just for this sucker. Listen to this here. Oh, yeah. It's pouring real nice. Real nice, Clark. That's a beautiful beer. A little cloudy. Not as, well, nope, that's about right. I was going to think it looked a little, actually looked a little more clear than I would expect a wheat beer like this to smell. Ah, yeah, smells old. Musty, you know, not old like, oh, man, this beer's been sitting around a while. No, it smells, it's got, you know, it's got some age quality to it. It's kind of an earthy, old world type of smell. Kind of like hay. Oh, my God, you know, these people can make some beer. All right, fine. I'm going to taste this. Ooh. Oh, man, sharp. My life, is that sharp. Oh, like lemons, man. Gee, many Christmas. I wasn't expecting that at all. Now, that is... Well, that's great. Very creamy, too, you know? That's a pop in the mouth, too. What's the alcohol content on this sucker, man? New Glarus, Berliner Weiss... Do they not put it on here? I don't know what it is. Doesn't say. It's a guess. Well, I'm going to guess 12.5%. I don't know. Anyway, it's got a good mouthfeel, so I never watch ABV. You know, when I brew Hefeweizen, I don't care. You know, I know it's supposed to be about 5%, 5.5% maybe. I've made them as high as 6.5%. So I don't care, man. It's extra body. Knock it up. Make the damn thing. I don't care. As long as we're talking about Gambler, and Gambler, listen, this was really kind of you to send this. He sent me some other New Glarus beers too, but I'm saving them for other shows. You'll have to wait. I'm in New Glarus heaven. But as long as we're talking about Gambler, let's talk about this. He's got a blog, all right? He started a food blog. It's called Eating Around. And you can check it out at gambler72.wordpress.com. He talks about food and beer, which are his two main passions. Kind of like me, my kind of guy. So hats off to him for sharing his passion and writing about it. He and his wife are complete rabid foodies. I didn't know this until, you know, they started listening to my show. And from what I've seen from them, they really know their way around a kitchen. I mean, I've seen pictures of stuff that they cook. Good stuff, man. It looks awesome. So it's always good to see. And it's always good to see people share their passion for their, you know, for the things that they love. And it just happens to be the two things I love, too. Beer and food. Anytime somebody talks about moving and the biggest roadblock they have and where decide where they're going to move to is whether or not it's within driving distance of a farmer's market, that's when you know you're dealing with a nut, a complete food-crazed nut. It's a sickness, and it's my kind of sickness. So hats off to you, Gambler. You rock. This beer is outstanding. I mean, seriously, I smelled it, smelled like a wheat beer. I tasted it and was like, holy crap, it tastes like lemons. Hey, in case you haven't visited my blog, zeroface.wordpress.com, there's a recipe there right underneath this episode's post. There's a recipe for cassoulet, and I really encourage all of you to try it. It's cold right now, unless you're in Hawaii, and it's time for comfort food. Okay? Everybody has their favorite comfort food. Mine are usually soups and stews, those kinds of dishes. And when I first flipped through my copy of Anthony Bourdain's Layal Cookbook, one of the first things that popped out at me was his recipe for cassoulet. And cassoulet is a classic French bean stew. It's like pork and beans, but how the French do it. It's peasant food, really. And it's peasant food that is usually my favorite kind of food. So it's a real experience to make this, too. It's delicious. It's really simple. It's not hard. It really isn't. I mean, it looks that way, but it's not. There are a lot of steps to it. It could take a lot of time if you did it all at once, but the beauty of this dish is that you spread the work out over a few days. So it's something that takes a while to make, and you can plan for it in advance. Say you want to have this thing, say, Friday or Saturday, or let's say the weekend, Sunday, all right? So Tuesday or Wednesday, you can start the small things, and they'll hang around. This is not going to go bad. It's not a dish that's actually going to spoil on you. Actually, the longer you take to make it, the better. There are several tasks. None of them are really involved. It's not tough. And In any case, even if you don't want to make this thing, all right, check out the post underneath this episode titled Cassoulet. And if you don't want to go through the trouble of making the entire casserole, the first thing on there is directions and ingredients that you'll need to learn how to make duck confit, which is really something that can be used for a lot of things. Ravioli fillings or an appetizer for canapés or whatever you want to do. But duck confit is very good, it's very rich, and it's very versatile. Again, I'm really fortunate to be living where I live because of the Asian markets here. I mean, I can get duck legs any time of the year. Fresh pork belly cut into strips or big pieces. All the time. At any time of the day, I can go in and get it. Now, if I go later in the day, it might be all sold out, then it's gone. But if I go, you know, any day of the year, I could pretty much be assured that I'm going to have it. And there's this special Spanish garlic pork sausage that's really brilliant in Cassoulet from a restaurant that's here in Tustin. It's called Black Sheep Bistro. That place is run by Chef Rick, who is an incredibly talented chef, classically trained chef. And he's got a little deli counter in the front of his restaurant where you can buy all sorts of Spanish and French gourmet items that are otherwise hard to find in like a regular grocery store. Even Whole Foods doesn't carry a lot of stuff like this. They're specialty items. Plus, he makes his own aioli and remoulade sauce. Oh, God. Just knock you down good. I mean, they're really specialty items, these things. So, when you want to make a dish like this, that's where I'm going to go for my stuff. I want authentic ingredients, and it just so happens that I can get them there. Duck fat is another thing. I mean, you could render duck fat yourself and keep it in your fridge, or you can buy it from a gourmet shop. Now, I usually make my own, as I buy either an entire duck and I render the fat off the skin, or sometimes, if you've got a relationship with your butcher at your meat shop, which you should be doing anyway, get them to save some of the skin for you. You know, just pop by and say you're interested in making duck confit this week or next week, and you need duck fat. So if they're carving up any legs or breasts from a duck, or they're just chopping up carcasses or whatever, maybe they can save some skin or some backs or whatever that they have. Save them for you. He'll probably sell you the scraps for a couple bucks or cheaper. Sometimes if it's just skin, they might even give it to you. Then you can just take it home. You bake it on low heat, you know, over a rack, and catch the drippings, and just render the fat off. And you've got duck fat. Duck fat has flavor that I really can't describe. To me, it smells like fall. It's really versatile, and it's the difference between making an ordinary dish and a spectacular dish. So I try to keep duck fat around as often as I can. Because you can't make cassoulet the way it's supposed to taste without a little bit of duck fat. And if you're interested in cooking some really classic French food in your home, check out Bourdain's Layal Cookbook on Amazon.com. There's a link to the book in my post for cassoulet, so I encourage all of you to at least take a look at that recipe and try making confit, because it's just fantastic. And all confit is, you can make confit of anything, is cooking something in its own fat. So it could be duck, it could be chicken, it could be anything. They even make garlic confit, which I think you can do in olive oil. And all it requires is the fat, a little salt, you know, your source meat, and what amounts to bouquet garni, you know. So, give it a shot.
I'm not alone in sensing a certain softness to the vicious, crusty underbelly of Tony Bourdain in the last year. How would you say having a child has changed you?
It's, I'm a daddy now. I think it's, you know, I'm getting into that little pink world, rainbows and unicorns and love. Well, you, I mean, you know, it's the greatest thing in the world. It totally changes everything. You definitely lose your heart for certain acts of thoughtless cruelty that would have been easy 2 years ago. You know, you see your infant daughter, you know, staring up at you. You know, grateful that you're changing her diaper or learning to do things. I mean, just so you know, so much other stuff doesn't mean anything anymore.
That's what it means.
You know, it's a major tectonic shift of priorities. You know, let's face it, looking cool really goes way down there on the priority list when you are regularly, you know, changing diapers and you know the entire song list from Yo Gabba Gabba and Elmo. You know, you're hopping around in your underwear, you know, dancing and singing for your 8-month-old.
And suddenly you realize...
You realize...
Boy, things are poison, a little different this week.
Poison cooler. Overrated.
Right. That's an issue you're going to have to deal with.
My feeling is... And I'm looking to gracefully make the transition from the bad boy of cooking to the sort of next Bill Cosby kind of a thing. I've been shopping for
those, I was going to say those sweaters.
I just need the sweater. I think that's really all that's missing.
Hey, you've probably seen or maybe even used this men's spray, this Axe or the Tag, their body sprays for men. Well, now there's Burger King's new meat-scented spray Flame. The Whopper sandwich is America's favorite burger, says they. Flame by Burger King captures the essence of that love and gives it to you. Behold the scent of seduction with a hint of flame-broiled meat. For $3.99, you can get a vial of meat-scented liquid and drive your girl wild with it. Now, let's think about this for a second, all right? I worked at Burger King when I was in high school. All right, I came home smelling like Whoppers and fries almost every night after a shift. And even when I didn't work the back, when I worked the counter, you know, selling the stuff, I came home smelling like, like shit. I mean, trust me, chicks don't dig it. Believe me, they don't dig it. In fact, those times when my mother would come pick me up, she'd demand that I take a shower when I got home. I reeked that bad. I mean, you don't see girls lining up outside McDonald's waiting for the fry guy to finish his shift, right? just a brilliant marketing campaign by Burger King. They do it well, and it's proof they have way too goddamn much money. Now, you know we couldn't do a show without mentioning China, right? I mean, it's 2009, but it's still my life as a foodie. So in China, one of the many delicacies that they have is called a hairy crab, right? Ooh, foul. A hairy crab. Sign me up. Remember, there's a really messed up joke here, but it's a food show, and I'm not going there. But I guess it's really delicious, though. You know, it's a Chinese favorite. They serve it steamed with soy sauce, and that's it. And they're expensive as hell because it's a delicacy. But now, I guess China is feeling the economic crunch, so fewer people are buying the hairy crabs, and it's driving down the price. So the hairy crab has basically become an economic barometer for the Chinese economy. So this report from CNN tells the whole story.
Last year's sales were the best in 10 years. This year is much worse.
Call it the hairy crab index. In Hong Kong and in places all over China, the hairy crab is considered a delicacy. Sometimes it can be extremely expensive. A crab of this size goes for about $60. But because of the financial pinch, these guys aren't selling so well.
Sales of the Shanghai specialty at this shop are down as much as 80%, a steeper drop than during the Asian financial crisis 10 years ago and the SARS outbreak in 2003. It's a poor reading for a good gauge of luxury retail sales here, as Hong Kong struggles with a recession and China's economy grows at its slowest pace in 5 years. Restaurants that rely on expensive Chinese banquet fare are struggling to claw their way to higher earnings.
We're getting less profit as people start to eat cheap.
Not only are people eating cheap, they're shopping cheap too. Stores are slashing prices, even for abalone, another seafood delicacy that normally sees blockbuster sales in the first quarter, ahead of the Lunar New Year.
Around February, I think our sales are going to be affected more by the economic downturn.
Yet another crabby economic forecast for 2009.
Now, China is a food mecca. I mean, man, they actually use a delicacy, a food item, as an economic barometer. And we don't do that, do we? I mean, what would we use? Does the hot dog count? I mean, hot dogs really don't go up. It's not really a delicacy either. I mean, what could we use as an economic barometer that's a food item? Oysters. I mean, what American food would we use? We don't even have anything like that. Seriously, hairy crab. You can go ahead and keep that, man. I don't want any part of it. It just sounds nasty, but I'm sure it's delicious. Make you strong. Make your breath strong. Hey, early in December, and this is a late story because I wrote these notes down. I read this thing in a Wall Street Journal. They ran a story about Parmigiano Reggiano. It shook the world of cheese. I mean, seriously. I mean, it might sound silly, but according to the paper, The Italian government is now planning a bailout for the Parmigiano-Reggiano industry. Because as it turns out, the situation is that the cheese sells for less than it actually costs to produce it. So an Italian cheesemaker was quoted in the article. In the article, it says it costs him 8 euros to produce a kilogram of cheese. He turns around and sells it for 7.40. So every time he sells a kilo of cheese, it's costing him. Now, if you don't know, Parmigiano-Reggiano is the most authentic form of Parmesan cheese. Like, you don't accept any substitutes. In Italy, it's to cheese what Cristal is to champagne. But what you have to consider are the prices charged by food stores in Europe and the United States for Parmigiano-Reggiano, between $25 and $65 a kilo, depending on the quality and the age of the cheese. So you got to think about this for a second. The producers of the cheese, especially the small ones, you know, that use traditional production methods, they're not getting a fair price for the cheese that they're making. The amount of second-rate plastic-wrapped Parmigiano sold in this country at premium prices is stupid. I was at Costco tonight, and I saw a chunk of it. This woman was buying it, and it said right on there, Parmigiano Reggiano. And I thought, that is not what that is. I don't know what it is, but that's not it. The small artisan farmhouse cheesemakers in Emilia-Romagna are going to go broke because of this crap. And it's sad. I mean, I think instead of a bailout, it's a short-term solution anyway. I mean, we're seeing it here in our country. A better way would be to maybe look for quality cheese, even if it means going organic. I mean, that's what we need. We need a fair trade movement for artisanal cheese producers. And like I said, I know it sounds silly, but think about it. It's another movement to help farmers get a fair shake. Cheesemakers definitely qualify for a fair shake. They work their ass off, and someone is making more money off of their hard work than they are. And it's just not fair. So think about it. I mean, you should pay through the nose for Parmigiano-Reggiano, and you'll taste the difference. Trust me, you will. But if it's, you know, plastic wrapped and sold in bulk, that's not it. Don't buy it. So getting back to Christmas, I mean, it was an incredible week for me. Seriously, I mean, so many things happened at once. 2 days before Christmas, I discover this blog written by this gal, Joe. It's called My Last Bite, mylastbite.com. Actually, she writes on two blogs. There's another one, Food Whores. Foodwhores.com is another one. I love that. Anyway, she has this post on molecular gastronomy, which, as you know, is the big thing. It's coming from Spain. It's here in the U.S. Chefs like Ferran Adrià, his brother, Jose Andreas, Grant Ashitz, here in the United States, you know, Alinea. Anyway, she writes how it's her new addiction after having taken a class on molecular gastronomy in November at Sur La Table here in L.A. And she includes links to some of the videos I'd seen before, including the No Reservations clip from El Bulli in Spain, decoding Ferran Adrià. And that started it all for me because I hadn't heard about it before seeing that a couple of years ago. So I wanted to try it so bad, but I never really thought it was possible for a home chef, you know, to do it in his kitchen. But according to her, and she met Adrià at a book signing, he wants to make it approachable to home chefs like us. So that's what he's been doing. So here she is. I see pictures, right? She's making pea ravioli at his class. If you've seen the episode of No Reservations, you'll know what I'm talking about. I'm steaming on the inside. I'm thinking, oh, no. Why didn't I know about this? I want to do this. A chemistry set in my kitchen? I mean, that's better than power tools. I mean, imagine how cool it must be to know how to do something as cool as that and to be able to serve it to your guests for a mousse-bouche or a first course or an appetizer. And blow the lid off the place right off the bat. I mean, they eat something like this and just it just sets the tone. You could go downhill from there and it wouldn't matter. So I'm like, I'm jealous, right? I'm reading the comments on this post, right? And here's a post from Hervé Tisse, who's like the godfather of the stuff. He invented it. And in his best broken English, he types, what she's talking about is not molecular gastronomy, but molecular cooking. And I'm like, huh, well, who's this guy? So she writes back. She apologizes. She says how sorry she was. She got it wrong. and how honored she is that he take the time not only to look at her blog, but to take the time to actually correct her. I mean, she's really honored. I mean, you can tell how she's writing back. She went so far as to change the title of the post to Molecular Cooking. So now I'm like, now how in the hell did he end up at her blog? I mean, she must be famous, a well-known blogger or something. I just hadn't heard of her before. And I'm thinking, well, maybe he was Googling himself. Hey, I'm Hervé Dease. We all do it. So he saw his name on her blog, and he went there, and or maybe she is famous. I don't know. Maybe she's a noted blogger. In any event, I love her blog, because after that, I just started reading it. I'm like, man, I really like how she writes. I mean, it's my kind of foodie journalism and photography. And she makes it look simple. And if you can make it look simple, and that takes talent, because yeah, I know it's not simple. None of this is simple. But if you can make it look that way, then you have a true gift. And she does. And she's nice. She's really approachable. So she makes these yogurt spheres with sodium alginate. And she serves them with the berries, and it looks like magic. I mean, I'm like, wow. She includes links to Lace Sanctuaire, which is a website you can go get the stuff if you want to perform molecular cooking in your kitchen. Now I'm coming out of my skin, right? Because I'm thinking, what, you can actually do this? So I comment on her blog, and she's like my favorite person in the world right now. And I'm going to do this. And of course I do. I went right to the site where she ordered her stuff, and I ordered my stuff. So she emails me. She's excited for me. She says she's going to send me a video from Jose Andres making these spheres. And if I'd like to see it, she can make a DVD for me. So, of course, I give her my address, and she goes ahead and burns this DVD. Just unreal. I'm a total stranger. She's excited that I'm getting into this. Just a real sweet person. So it really takes me by surprise when people show that kind of kindness. I mean, I've met some really incredibly kind and giving people on the internet, especially through podcasting. But she takes a cake. So anyway, Christmas comes, and I'm out of my skin with excitement. I can't wait for my chemistry to come so I can start making this stuff in my kitchen. A couple days passed, and here comes another email from Joe. Sir Latab in L.A. is going to host another molecular gastronomy class. This one's in February, and if I'd like to sign up, I have to hurry. So I did, and I'm going to go. And it's February 22nd in Los Angeles. I think that's Oscar Sunday. So I'm going to bring my camera. And maybe my iPod will make a show out of it. And I'm seriously excited to try all this stuff. Pea ravioli without the pasta. Apple caviar. Olives without a skin. Dehydrated bacon. So many things. So many possibilities. It's mind-boggling. It changes cooking for me. And it's almost too much for me to even dive into right now on this show, because it's something I want to discuss at length and in depth, and requires a lot more explanation than I really have the energy or time for now. And I have a lot of energy, trust me. Suffice it to say, if there are bigger things on the horizon for this show and the blog.
Molecular gastronomy is one of the hottest trends in cuisine around the world today.
This is molecular gastronomy. And what chefs do is not molecular gastronomy. It's molecular cooking. Stuff exists. I define molecular gastronomy. I know what it is. Whip.
Hervé Dease is a molecular gastronomist. In fact, he coined the term molecular gastronomy. Why is molecular gastronomy important?
Science produces knowledge. And knowledge is what makes us different from animals. So science is important because we are not animals.
Back in 1988, French chemist Hervé Dease coined the phrase molecular gastronomy, founding a culinary field devoted to the science of deliciousness. His research has led to methods allowing modern chefs to foam, gel, and liquefy food into new and more flavorful creations. Dease also has a bit of an obsession with the chemistry behind the history of cooking.
Oh, there it is.
By lab testing techniques from old cookbooks, 19th century cooking traditions, and even old wives' tales, Dease sets out to explain the science behind the art of cooking.
Hey, I received a really interesting gift from my friend Mark for Christmas. He gave me a bacon lover's gift set. Now, I'm no different than anyone. I say I like bacon. I like bacon. But I'm not crazy nuts about bacon. Some people are crazy nuts about bacon. I mean, they love it. I know a woman. She can sit down, she can eat an entire pound of bacon. And I'm sure that is no big feat. I'm positive. There are people out there who could probably do 2-3 times that amount without a problem. but it's not the healthiest thing in the world for you to do, you know? I mean, you can eat a pound of bacon, but why the hell would you want to do that? Sodium, fat, it's high. Man, it's way high in bacon. High blood pressure, seriously, it's on the way. Have a few pieces, enjoy some bacon. But what's interesting about this set, you open his box. I should take pictures. Maybe I'll take some pictures. It contains this thing called Baconaise. It's a bacon-flavored mayo spread. 6 containers of bacon-enhanced rubs in a tube of bacon-flavored lip balm. So if your lips are chapped, you can use this on your lips and see how long it takes you to actually lick it off before you have to reapply it. It's kind of like that Burger King flame spray. You want to smell like a hamburger, or do you want your lips to taste like bacon? Either way, she can't resist you. But the best part about this entire set, it's that it's completely vegetarian. I mean, can you believe that? It's all synthetic. It's got zero bacon product in it, yet it tastes just like bacon. It's the beauty of modern science, and you got to love that. So I got to thinking about it. And it's true. Bacon really is maybe the most popular of all foods. I mean, everyone talks about bacon. Bacon, 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 bacon. Bacon appears on everything. If your recipe sucks and you don't know what to do with it, add some bacon. Guaranteed, 99.9% of the time, it's going to make it taste better. Ask someone if they like bacon. 9 people out of 10 are going to say yes. And chances are that one person that says no is probably lying to you. I read recently that every influential and innovative chef, from Grant Achatz to Thomas Keller, is using bacon in appetizers, main courses, and desserts. It even shows up in cocktails. They got a bacon martini. I mean, that sounds moronic, but I'm sure it's delicious. So I have to wonder, at any point, are we going to get sick of bacon? Are we going to hit our saturation point with bacon? Because we know it's not the most healthy thing in the world to eat, a lot of anyway. But the exceptionally fatty variety, I mean, at one point, I think we're going to hit our saturation point. Now, what do you think about that? I wonder, what do you think about bacon? Are we sooner or later going to get sick of it? Or is it just going to be the one thing in the United States that we will never, ever, ever tire of?
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. The dollar buys a nickel's worth. Banks are going bust. Shopkeepers keep a gun under the counter. Punks are running wild in the street. And there's nobody anywhere who seems to know what to do, and there's no end to it. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Oh yeah, something else I wanted to bring up. Any of you guys use Yelp? Yelp.com, Y-E-L-P.com. It's like a web-based Zagat-type guide for restaurants and other things like hotels, bars, and whatever. But it's not like Zagat's. It's all built on user input. So there's no professional critics. It's all users that, you know, people who go to these restaurants and they come back and they'll just like type up their review. So if you become a Yelp member, and it's free, you can review restaurants. You look up any restaurant or type of restaurant in your area, and you'll see a ton of them listed with reviews from users who have been there. So I was Yelping for a while. I mean, it was exercise for me. I could write restaurant reviews and upload pictures of the food that I've taken from the different places I'd been. I enjoyed it. It helped me. It was exercise, like I said. But then I decided to actually use it for suggestions. So I was trying to find a pho joint near my house. You guys all know I love pho. I like to have it a lot. But as it is, I only have it maybe a couple times a month. Unfortunately, the only real time I'm actually able to eat it and get really decent pho from one place to across the street from our office at work, it's in a strip mall. So I only get it once a week if I want it from there, but sometimes you like to do other things for lunch, so I'm looking for pho here in Irvine. And I'm reading these reviews, and they're insipid. They read like they're written by children. It's like children are reviewing restaurants. They don't like the ambiance. They don't like the tea. The tea sucks. The broth gave my headache. The lighting sucks. The lighting's bad. The waitresses are rude. It was busy. None of them said anything constructively negative about the pho. I mean, I'm reading the review to see consistencies in negative things. Does that make sense? I want consistencies in negative things about the soup, so I know whether or not I should stay away. If you guys all said the broth was thin, if you all said that they went light on the meat, if everybody said the noodles were chewy, then I can make the determination as to whether or not I would want to eat there. But the feedback was, you know, excuse my language here, just really fucking stupid. So I took a really deep look at Yelp.com. I realized that a large portion of these reviews on just about anything are inanely objective and written very poorly. And I've completely given up on using it and participating in it. I ended up going to the fa place near me that got the most varied bad reviews just because I had to see for myself. And you know what happened? Because even poorly made pho couldn't really be that bad. I went in there. I got it to go. I took it home. The service was fine. The speed was fine. The price was fine. Okay? So there's those three things. Now the pho. I get the pho home. I put it all together. The pho was fine. I had nothing bad to say about it, really. Nothing. I went back, I looked at the comments on Yelp, and gave every one of those negative points that were made on that particular restaurant were completely irrelevant. Yelp.com seems to be a giant waste of time. I think we should leave restaurant reviews to people who are actually paid to review restaurants, who have a better grasp of what to consider and what not to. And that's what I have to say about Yelp. And that is pretty much all I have to say on everything today. I'm done. I am completely cooked. Suffice it to say that if you've got some big things on the horizon here for this show, molecular gastronomy is going to be a thing that is really going to hit off this year. It's going to be a big deal. I fully plan on providing a wealth of information to you on that, including everything that I learned in the class, how to do it yourself, how easy it is to do it at home, how to make it approachable, and how to be creative, how to be as absolutely creative as you want in the kitchen and make a big, big splash for your guests. And who knows, you know, it could be the hit of 2009. But thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting the show. Thanks to Gambler for the Berliner Weiss from New Glarus Brewing. Check out Gambler's blog, gambler72.wordpress.com. Don't be afraid to make that duck confit or the cassoulet. It's absolutely delicious. You'll get hooked on it. You'll love it, and it's good, good cold weather food. Music in this episode from Does It Offend You? I'm not sure about you, but I was offended by it. If you're looking for quality podcasts about beer, check out beersafari.com. It's a jungle of beer. My name is Phil. This has been My Life as a Foodie, and I'll see you next time. Salute.
You once told me I wouldn't know it enough. Well, let me tell you something. Yeah, I do. You once told me I wouldn't feel it enough. Well, let me tell you that, baby. I feel it too.